where we're going for the day. We're going to have a teaching session for the next 25-30 minutes, and then we're going to have a break for coffee and stuff. And then we're going to have another... actually, I forgot to ask. Do you have a mobile phone? Could you turn it off? Would you mind doing that? Owen. After coffee, we're going to have another 25-minute teaching session, after which we're going to break into discussion groups. Now, you have a number on the sticker on your packs, and after that second session, we're going to ask you to break up to different places in the auditorium here, corresponding with the number that's on your pack. Is that clear? No. Yes. Kind of. Thank you. And then we'll give you more of an idea what we'll do after lunch when we just before we break. So I wanted to spend the first couple of minutes of this time together. I've got a couple of questions I want to ask you, a couple of things I want to put to you. And before I'm going to put one up on the screen in a couple of minutes, but would you say that you're someone who likes things to stay the same, or do you like things to kind of keep changing, keep moving on? Now, you have to answer honestly, not because a certain friend is beside you or you think you have that one of those alternatives is the right thing to say. What do you think? Would you be a person who just loves change and you want to change things up all the time, or do you really like the safety of things being the same all the time? What do you think? A bit of both. Change is bad. Oh, I'm sorry. Speak up. Yeah, that's okay. That's good. That's helpful. So we're kind of there's a general kind of agreement that we like change. No. Yes. It depends on the circumstance. That's totally true, isn't it? It depends on the reason for the change. That's good. Don't change what you like. Oh, okay. Now it's coming out. That's helpful. It's helpful just to kind of hear these things, even though we're kind of having a laugh at the same time. It's remarkable the amount of different things, the spectrum that we'll find. You get 50 or so people together and it's like this and that and this and that. Any other thoughts or comments or ideas? Yeah? Change can be painful. Yeah, it can certainly be. Okay. Well, I guess what I wanted to do is spend, I guess, our first session this morning suggesting that I think, maybe taking a little bit of a risk and saying that I think, not just today, but I think on a whole, I think God is speaking to the worshiping community, to those people involved in facilitating some worship in the local church, to change. I think that's what God's speaking. I think it's certainly what we're hearing in this church, in Court Church, and it is remarkable speaking to friends around the country, around the world even, who just find that God seems to be asking specific questions that are sometimes painful. That kind of, what do you want to do? Do you want to just do what you've always done? Are we content to settle for what we've always known? Or take that maybe step? And I'm not talking about some big kind of like death wish, jump off a cliff into something we don't know, but just saying yes when God asks us to do something. It's an issue of obedience as much as it is of, you know, coming up with just strange and kooky ideas that no one's heard of. But just to kind of set that out there first, I think really, while I'm going to say a couple of different things now, I guess at the heart of it is just to suggest to you all that I think God is speaking to us as people responsible for serving the local church in the area of sung worship. I think he's speaking about how he wants us to consider new things and consider new tactics. And I'm not just talking about new songs. I'm not going to be talking about what some people see as freedom and what other people see as orderly and right. And I'm not really talking about that because, well, I'm going to start explaining my talk if I keep on talking like that. But, and I guess just really when I was praying and preparing, I just guess I was excited at the sense of just, it's like an invitation. It's like, I was reading a book a couple of months back called The Secrets of the Vine by an author called Bruce Wilkinson. And he has this little chapter in there called Flourishing Under the Shears. And how often he was talking about change, and how often our response is we see that maybe someone or God is taking from us, when really what God is doing is making room for something new. The difference between God making room for some new things as opposed to just us getting caught on the what's changed and what's been taken from us. They're kind of two quite different attitudes, really. And I guess that's kind of what I wanted to use as the place to start out. And I mean, I kind of briefly mentioned it earlier. The whole reason and the aim of getting you all here together on a day like today, and it's remarkable. This is the third time we've done this. And how many of you have been here before at an encounter day? So very few of you have actually been to one of our training days before, which is exciting. It's exciting to think that, you know, God's got something completely different for us today, and he thought it was fit and right to get a whole different group of people together to speak it. So it's cool. So this kind of brings me to what I wanted to look at in more depth this morning. And like I said, it's another question. Don't worry, I'm not going to be asking you annoying questions all day long. But can you please put that slide up there? And the slide with the text. Be more specific. Another question. It might look like a phrase, but it's a question, really. Now, take a little bit longer this time before you start to interact with me. What are you? Are you a worship leader or a lead worshipper? And it's not a trick question. I'm not trying to kind of get you into some kind of spiritual cul-de-sac where there's no way out. But have you ever heard of the phrase pearl seed farming? Nobody. Where they place a, you know how a pearl forms? At the bottom of the ocean, there's a little sand or speck gets into the shell, and it's an irritant. And the shell basically coats this irritant to stop being irritating, and it becomes what we call pearls. So it's kind of like the process today. I'm kind of hoping, well, I do care if you like me or not, I guess. I'm not going to lie. But the idea is just to kind of put some little thoughts, some like irritants into your way of thinking that will become, something of great worth at some stage or level. Even if I get death threats and hate mail, it's worth it, I'm thinking. And I think this is something I stumbled on a couple of months ago, and I've got to say, it's not a question, having thought I answered it one day, that I just moved on because I'd answered it. It's not as straightforward as that. It kind of comes back like a strong onion sandwich. No, that's bad, isn't it? But it kind of keeps on returning. It keeps on cropping up, and you kind of go, wow, I've got to kind of, it kind of demands my attention again, and I kind of work through some of the issues or some of my thoughts in relation to it, and then I move on again. It's not an easy question, but I guess I just wanted to start out by saying that I think this question is definitely one worth attempting. And I think, like we were saying earlier on about change, that this is a good place to start. What your immediate answer is, and because there's always a gap or a distance between maybe your first or your immediate response or reaction to something and how that works itself out in your life. There's always a gap there. There's always a difference between those two things. Hearing something first and how you react, and then a couple of months or a couple of years down the road, how that's actually fitting into your life. Okay, I've made the point. You get my idea. I think it's an important question to be asking. And to maybe even just to kind of venture into that more of that kind of irritating territory, this seminar it's really not kind of structured in such a way where it will completely resolve this question. I'm going to highlight some areas that I think are relevant as we look at the issue, but you're not going to leave having it laid out for you, and it's not my incompetence. I've chosen to do that because I want you to go and bring it to your Bible study, bring it to your prayer times, bring it to the places where you seek God and you ask Him questions and allow Him and by His Spirit to find what He wants you to take from that. Is that fair enough, so that I'm not kind of projecting something onto you today apart from just some more things to take with you? So there's two parts to it, so we'll just go straight into it. Worship leader. Let's read a quick quote here. A worship leader is someone that is only focused on being a worship leader and is primarily concerned with leading something, meaning that my main focus is leading you. So if I was standing in front of you theoretically as a worship leader with my guitar, as a worship leader with my thinking and the way I'm looking at things, my responsibility is to lead you. I've been given responsibility, I've been given a job to do, I've been entrusted a portion or a certain section of a service to me, I've had that entrusted to me, and I've got to make sure that's led a certain way and it's led well. But often the mind of a worship leader is caught up in how I'm doing what I'm being asked to do. So while you're leading worship, you're kind of going, are people with me? And often, if I'm honest, looking back, I'm judging how well I'm doing and how excited people look by what I'm doing. And they're thinking, if people are all sitting down, I'm not doing my job. If people just, you know, are falling asleep or checking the girl across the hall out, or vice versa, that I'm not leading well enough, that the ways I've chosen to do what I've been asked to do in the area I've been entrusted to serve, that I'm basing how well I'm doing that job based on how people are responding and the kind of participation is involved there. Are they with me? Are they listening? Are they awake? Maybe that's a question you ask on Sunday morning. See someone kind of propped up against the sound desk at the back. Are they acting like they wish they hadn't come to church this morning and they were back in bed with a paper or were looking at the TV? No reaction. It must be just in our church we have those kind of people then. Oh no, they're not with me. So I've got to change what I'm doing. I've got to crank up the tempo. I've got to do an elaborate arrangement. I've got to get some more volume. I've got to give them what they want or give them what they know. So answering a question together as a group about personal change is one thing. But let's just be honest, leading a gathered group of people in sung worship into change, well, that's another ball game in itself. Having made a choice to change is one thing, but to try and facilitate a change in some worship in a gathered group of people, that's something else altogether. Have you ever had someone, you know, kind of crossing their arms kind of in front of you, like, go on, make me worship, I dare you. Maybe that's just at our church too then. And here's the thing, there could be 100 people in the room, but if there's a group that seems like it isn't with me, I forget all of the other people who are, and I focus totally on the guys that aren't with me. That's all I can think about. Now, maybe when I'm saying all of this, you're kind of going, well, yeah, actually, so what? What's wrong with wanting to be sensitive as we lead? I thought that that's what our job was, to lead and to facilitate. And I think, just for what it's worth, I think you'd be right in asking those questions. We do need to be sensitive. But one of the things I wanted to use today to do was to remind ourselves about our destination. What's our destination? It's worship. Where we're going, the reason why we're doing what we're doing is so that we can worship together. Not a great performance. That's not the destination. When we come together, the destination has to be worship, not just a great performance. And even if this means there's a process of refocusing and a new learning a church might need to embrace. Easier said than done. The focus here isn't on God first. It's been changed, and its focus is concerning itself with people, their response, or lack of it, the songs you've chosen and how you're using them, the tempo, the key. And hear me out, I agree that these are not by any means irrelevant, but secondary. That's the main point that I want to make for this point here on worship leader. It's not that whether we do things in, you can't do 10 songs in one key. You can't start with 14 slow songs and don't lead people into a place of thanksgiving. I understand that there is practical things that are helpful for when we come together to facilitate our destination, which is worship. But what I'm saying is that I think those things and issues must always be secondary, not the primary focus. A quote I found when I was preparing for today: it is not the noise of our songs that brings praise and glory to God. God searches for the motivation behind our actions and is not fooled for one moment when we try to substitute beautiful music for beautiful relationships. I was reading him. At the moment, I'm reading through the Bible in a year, which means every day you give a certain Old Testament portion, New Testament portion, and a psalm or a proverb. And over this past week, I've been reading from Hebrews. And chapter 4, verse 13, I started to see how to fit it in here. The writer of this letter reminds us that nothing in all of creation is hidden from God's sight. Isn't that frightening? It's funny, there seems to be sometimes like a disconnect. You know, we come together to worship this everlasting and holy God, and sometimes it feels like, you know, we lose that perspective somehow. We forget that when we come in and we're struggling to stay awake or wishing we were at home, and there's that sense of everything we're thinking, everything we are, nothing is hidden from him. He knows exactly where our head and our heart are at. And being reminded that he searched for the motivations behind our actions, not just the songs, not just the hymns, not just the liturgy, but he looks straight past that to the motivation behind our actions, which is, it's really quite challenging, isn't it? As a church here, we have been experimenting with and implementing some change over the last couple of months. And what we've done is really we've stripped everything back, and we haven't had any bands or any groups of musicians leading our times of sung worship at all for, I think, since the beginning of August. So we've had, you know, all of August, September, October, and now heading into our fourth month. And it was frightening to see the change. I can remember one Sunday thinking, oh gosh, this is particularly hard. I was talking to my, well, I was kind of feeling sorry for myself on the way home from church to my wife, which I often do. And I was kind of off put by how much kind of chatter and sound and noise and people's conversations not stopping when we'd begun to sing to our everlasting and holy God. And there was an attitude and a heart that I felt was maybe missing, and I didn't know how to react to that. But it was the frightening thing that Becky kind of suggested, that maybe this wasn't a new thing or a new development, that maybe it was just the noise of the bands and the noise of the PA that was masking that somehow. And for the first time actually in years, we were actually seeing where we were at as a worshipping community, which was a frightening thing to see. And then we realised actually the things we need to engage with aren't just the sounds of and the musicianship and arrangements of music, but to concern ourselves with that heart and that attitude, and realizing that he sees the motivations behind our actions, and to try in what best way we could, whether that's very simple or even elaborate, to try and just begin to connect with that. So I'm speaking to you as someone who is in change and hoping to stay in where we found. Another challenging quote that I found, it's actually in your pack, you've got a quotes page in through your pack there. You don't need to take it out or anything, but it reads like this: worship is not a musical experience. I might be stepping on some toes there, I don't know, maybe not. Worship is not a musical experience. Musicians, singers, and worship leaders can no more create a worship experience than an evangelist can create a salvation experience. Both worship and salvation are decisions. Decisions that only individuals can make. And I guess before I leave this one and move on to our second part as we finish the next 10 minutes, I think we just need to be careful that we're not making people's decisions for them as we serve, and focus solely on creating an environment where people feel free and safe enough to respond and make their own decisions. Okay, we're moving on. I'm running over slightly, but sorry? Yeah, okay. Really what I'm suggesting is that worship is not a musical experience. And what I mean by that is that we can create an environment where people feel, well, worship is a decision that someone makes. So really our responsibility is to create an environment where people feel safe to make that decision. the quote that I read was that it's not a musical experience, and as musicians and singers, we can create a worship experience no more than an evangelist can create a salvation experience. That it's ultimately the heart's response of an individual's heart's response to God. And is that clear? Is that helpful? Yeah. Okay. So finishing up on this lead worshipper. So I'll kind of do the role part again, like I began on the last one. If I'm a lead worshipper, my main focus isn't really in leading you. That's my secondary focus. My first focus is worshipping. I'm a lead worshipper. And I want the first person in the room worshipping God with all their heart to be me. Now this is the important part. Ben. Okay, don't worry. We haven't worked this out beforehand. It doesn't mean that I don't care about Ben, okay? Because I'm here to serve. We've talked about that in the last point. I'm here to serve the church, and for this conversation, I'm here. My responsibility is to lead the people into the presence of God, to facilitate a place where they feel safe enough to make their decision. So what I'm saying here is that, and this is the important piece, because on the flip side, that can be maybe interpreted as, well, we just don't care about people. But that's actually not the point I'm trying to make. I'm not disinterested in Ben, but I'm here to serve, because I'm here to serve, and part of my responsibility is to lead people. God is going to use us as we serve to lead and direct people as we sing and play. But we need to keep in mind the point I made just as I finished there about decisions. So I can sing the songs I prepared through the arrangements I rehearsed with the band or musician who's accompanying me, but I can't, by doing that, I can't make Ben worship God. That's a choice and a decision he alone can make. Otherwise, we're just kind of manipulating people and... Is that clear? Do you see the difference there? And we have, and this is something that I'm kind of relearning, but probably seeing like I've never seen before. Earlier I mentioned about how we have an everlasting and holy God, and for some reason he's allowed us the responsibility and opportunity to serve the church this way. It's an absolutely incredible thing. And there have been times, unfortunately, when I haven't appreciated that as fully as I think I do now. So we're given that responsibility, that charge, that invitation to issue to people when we come together through the week, when we come together on Sundays, to be that group of people responsible for making people feel safe enough and, you know, free enough to make their own contributions and to worship our everlasting and holy God. Excuse me. We have some amazing things to celebrate. I don't know if I'm going to have all the time I need to finish this out completely. But what I wanted to, I guess, just kind of end on was this kind of focus, to kind of share a little bit of the focus that God's giving us as a church at the moment. And we've been reading, I guess, again about, I talked earlier about destination and how the destination is worship, that encounter with God. But Jesus has done something incredible to make that possible. And remembering that and involving the truth of that, letting the truth of what Jesus has done, the work he accomplished on the cross, to inform our worship, I think is very, very important. Because it kind of sets everything in context. It's like if we can get this thing about, you know, here in Hebrews 10, 19 and 20, it says this: therefore, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain that is his body. Essentially, what that's saying is that we are all, every one of us, every last one of us, invited, encouraged to have confidence. Because of the work of Jesus, to follow him to the way he has made for us to come and the place that he has prepared. Graham Kendrick, in a book I've been reading at the moment, calls it the ever open way of the broken body of Jesus. Because of what he did on the cross when he died for us, he made this way, because we're told in the Bible and the Gospels that at the moment Jesus died, the curtain in the temple was torn. It was torn completely in half. And where one man, the high priest, would go into the Holy of Holies on behalf of God's people once a year to sacrifice for the sins of the people, that was now no longer. And because of Jesus' sacrifice once for all, every one of us, we have that right, that invitation to come right into God's presence. I mean, that is probably one of the most incredible things we can ever try to get our heads around. And I think it's really important. Take the time you need. Don't worry about the schedule. Okay. But it's funny, sometimes we hear these things and we've heard them in Bible memory verses from Sunday school, right the way through to sermons in church, Sunday by Sunday, or conferences we attend, or our training days like this. But so often the familiar things, those things that you know, that you can kind of like rhyme off, they don't always connect. They're not always like, you don't really let them inform and change the way that you live your life. Does that make sense at all? No one's nodding their head. I'll keep going. It's absolutely incredible that when Jesus died for us on the cross, he made, through his death, made a way for each one of us to come into the Holy of Holies, into the presence of God. How incredible is that? That's done. You know, in the tabernacle, in the desert, and the tent that they had built, there was never any seats in there. Because the priest's job, sacrificing for the sins of the people, would never be done. It would never be over, because it was so great. But when Jesus went to heaven, what did he do? He sat down. He's seated at he's seated at the Father's side. That means it's done. It's finished. It's over. He's done it once for all. That is incredible freedom. Incredible, an incredible invitation for us. And to be honest, it kind of blows out of the water all of our songs and our lyrics and our chord progressions, because that's just the means by which we choose to celebrate some of those things. But the work itself has nothing to do with the music that we do. It's already been done. And if we could allow that to come from here right down into our hearts, and if we could equip our churches to not only see and agree with that, but to see it implemented in how we, in our attitudes as we meet together, that would be a remarkable thing. Absolutely, truly remarkable thing. But confidence, it talks about confidence here to enter the most holy place. There's an online dictionary I use quite a bit, and it describes confidence as the quality or state of being certain. The quality or state of being certain. Would you describe your attitude or frame of mind as a lead worshipper when you come to serve, preparing your heart and choosing your songs, as someone who's confident of that, certain of that? Would it describe the attitude or the frame of mind of the people that you lead in worship in your college CU or your church or your fellowship, your cell group? Do you think that that's the word that you would use to describe their worship, as being informed by that scripture? Certain confidence. There's an author, a guy called A.W. Tozer, he says that one of the ingredients of our worship needs to be boundless confidence in the character of God. Boundless confidence in who God says He is and what he has promised us to do. It's a confidence in who God is and all that He has said He will do that needs to inform our corporate worship. So, as a lead worshipper, we invite people to make their decisions based on celebrating these truths. We're going to come back and check on Ben every so often in between my worshipping and my modelling of that confidence and the use of the songs and arrangements we've prepared to see how he's doing. But I'm a lead worshipper, so I'm going to leave today saying, I know somebody really worshipped today, and I know it was me.